Today is Wednesday, January 17th, year 2001. We are in Jennison Fieldhouse on campus in East Lansing. I'm Jeff Charnley, along with Dr. Fred Honhart, interviewing Assistant Athletic Director Karen Langland for the MSU Oral History Project for the University's Sesquicentennial that's coming up in the year 2005. Ms. Langland, you can see that we're tape recording. Would you give us permission to tape record today?
I certainly do.
Okay. I'd like to start with some questions about your educational background and personal background. Where did you grow up, and where did you go to high school and to college?
Grew up in the west side of the state in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and went to Grand Rapids Christian there, and then to Calvin College.
What year did you graduate with your BA?
In 1970.
And then did you do any graduate work?
I taught for a while, for about 5 years in the Kentwood school system, and then started working on my master's degree when I first came to Michigan State, and got that in about 2 years. So, you know, I think I got here at 76, 77 season.
Mm-hmm. Were you active in sports in high school?
Yes,
in
very much.
Too?
Actually, I should take that back. In high school, I was a little bit pre-women's sports, so... for the most part, we didn't have a lot of programs in high school, so I participated in like an ASA softball program in the summer, a little bit of junior tennis, and then basketball my senior year in high school. That was about it. I participated in athletics more in junior high because of the Christian school that I went to had programs for girls in a number of different sports, but then had this kind of blank period of time when I went to high school because there were no programs.
Mm-hmm. And how about at Calvin?
Calvin, I participated in a number of sports because it's a Division III school. It was basketball, volleyball, tennis, played a year of field hockey, a lot of intramural programs, but I think that was basically it.
What interested you in teaching?
I love the combination of teaching and combining teaching and coaching, and so my degree was in physical education, and you know, I really consider myself a teacher more than a coach.
Who were some of your early mentors?
There weren't very many. I had a professor in physical education and my tennis coach at Calvin College by the name of Karen Timmer, who was very important in my life. And then there was a senior at Calvin when I was a freshman that I think had a lot of influence, and her name was Yvonne Van Gore. You know, I kind of followed her career in teaching and coaching.
Did you maintain any contacts with them later?
Not with Karen Timmer. I've lost contact with her, but Yvonne Van Gore, yes. She's in the Boston area teaching.
The how was it that you came to Michigan State for your graduate work?
Well, let's see. It's kind of a long story, but... two reasons, really. One, I was working on my permanent teaching certificate, and at the time, the class I took, in fact, a number of classes I took, were taught by Dr. Nell Jackson, who was the women's athletic director here at Michigan State at that time. She was teaching an extension course in Grand Rapids, and I took a number of classes from her, so I got to know her, and she eventually was the person that hired me as a women's basketball coach. But I also was kind of... maybe a little uneasy, maybe teaching at the middle school. I just wanted something a little bit more, especially coaching-wise. I wanted a little bit higher skill level, and so I thought about just coming to Michigan State and getting my master's degree in athletic training. And one August, I got a call from Dr. Nell Jackson. She said she needed a basketball coach and wondered if I'd be interested. And I said, absolutely. And I had already applied to grad school here and had been accepted. So I came down for an interview, and she hired me on the spot.
Well, how would you describe the program at that time? It hadn't been in existence very long, had it?
No, but it was pretty successful. Mickey Bale had been coaching for a number of years, and she had left. And the year before I got here, a gentleman by the name of Dominic Marino had coached. I think they were 2-13 the season that he was here, and she was looking for a woman to, you know, take over the program, and because she knew me through those classes, and I also had a connection here with Dr. Annalise Knoppers, who was My volleyball coach at Calvin was a professor here at that time at Michigan State and was good friends with Dr. Nell Jackson. And so she recommended me as well for, you know, for the basketball position. So it was kind of a little complicated, but the program really wasn't in too bad a shape other than the year just before I came.
In terms of wins and losses.
Right, correct. Yeah, not in terms of financial support. It was terrible.
the league that MSU was in at that time, were your opponents. Who were they, or how would you describe that?
Well, we were not in the Big Ten Conference, and we were not under NCAA. We were under the AIW, which is the Association of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women. And that organization's structure was state tournaments, and then regional tournaments, and then the national tournament. So really, our opponents were all the schools in the state, and we weren't divided by Division I, II, and III at that time. They were just all AIAW. And so Michigan State was competing against Calvin or Grand Valley or Oakland University or, you know, anybody that had a women's basketball program. And on a given weekend, we had a state tournament. The winner of that went to regional, which was generally the Great Lakes area, and the winner of that tournament went to the national tournament, in which there were the 16 top teams. We did play some Big Ten schools just because of our association with the men's program, so we did have some Big Ten competition. In fact, had a Big Ten tournament, just a once a year thing, but not necessarily a round robin or a double round robin against Big Ten opponents.
Did you play Michigan at that time?
Always. From the beginning of time.
Any special pressures on that?
Not really. Not like there were in the last, you know, 5 years or so.
Why do you think you wanted to be a coach?
Because I love sports and I love teaching. And so if you combine the two, you got yourself a coaching position. I mean, I really, because of my background, thinking, you know, in participating in athletics, I just really enjoyed all sports. And in fact, when I first started teaching, I coached everything because I was in a middle school. I was the only physical education teacher. So I, you know, coached track and soccer and softball and volleyball and basketball and tennis and just about everything. And never really specialized, if you want to call it that, in basketball until I came to Michigan State. But I really enjoyed teaching. I think I'm pretty organized. I liked breaking things down in progressions, and it just seemed to be a perfect fit.
When you first started here, it was really different than what it is now. How would you describe, well, let's just start with coaching philosophy and the game itself. How has that changed in the time you were coach?
I honestly don't think that my coaching philosophy changed that much since I was here. There were a lot of things around me that changed. My philosophy was to get our athletes, the women athletes, to play up to their potential. And, you know, I always loved the running game, so it was always, if we had the personnel to do it, we were always a running team, and I'm kind of defensive-minded, so defense was always probably the number one thing that I would, you know, that I would really focus on. That was probably the only thing that didn't change over the course of, you know, the 24 years that I was here. I took this job for $6,000. I was a graduate assistant along with that, and in order to kind of make ends meet, I was also teaching physical education activity courses. So I went from that until my last year when I was making $100,000 plus, no teaching, no master's degree, no coursework, nothing. So that part of it really changed. I think the athletes, my first year here, we had one scholarship for a women's basketball player. My last year, we had 15 full rides. You know, the competition, we went from AIW to NCAA. We went from playing state teams to being in the Big Ten, playing Big Ten competition. We went from participating in our games in the IM Circle to playing in the Breslin Center, in the IM Circle in front of maybe 20 people. The Breslin Center in front of sometimes 7,000 or 8,000. You know, we went from the pressure that I put on myself to win to pressure that you know, the administration and the community and so forth puts on coaches now to win. And I think the athletes were very different, much more self-motivated, greater work ethic, and just kind of committed, I think, more to a team concept than what they are now.
Okay, that you've raised a whole series of
yes,
interesting
I have.
Questions that we can go to. You just mentioned, well, let's just start with physical facilities. You said you first were playing over at the IM, and then you moved to Jenison, and then played here for a long time, and then Breslin.
Actually, there was a step in there where we were in the IM West.
IM West. How would you describe the development of that, and did that, what impact did that have?
I think a lot of it was, you know, we kind of outgrew the IM circle, and there were a lot more physical education classes, so we had some problems in terms of scheduling games and that sort of thing. The IM West Sports Arena was a much bigger facility in comparison, and I honestly don't remember how many years we were in each, but I do remember we had some problems in the IM West with the surface that we were playing on. We had a lot of stress fracture type injuries because that floor is built over, or is put on top of concrete, much different than how the floors are constructed now. And that was one of the deciding factors for us to move over here to Jenison and share this facility with the men's basketball team. And then, of course, when the Breslin Center was built, then it was a gender equity issue. And, you know, it was, the plans were for us to go over there when the men went over and move into that facility, offices, locker rooms, as well as competing there.
When you came here, to follow up on that, gender equity, Judd Heathcote came about the same time.
He came exactly the same time.
And you outlasted him.
Yes, I did. That was always my goal.
Could you sort of describe what the relationship was like with you two and the two programs? Because obviously they were at very different levels. Mm.
Our relationship changed a lot over the, you know, number of years that we worked together. Initially, because I was in a totally different building, both my office and practice and our competition, I really didn't have much interaction with him at all, other than in maybe departmental meetings or so forth. And I think there was a respect of sorts there. Probably I had much more respect for him than he did for me, because I'm not sure when he first came that he was a real advocate of women, you know, athletes. But I think the biggest change occurred when we moved over to Breslin together, because I think he realized then that my staff and I and our athletes were putting in just as much time as he and his staff and his athletes. And I think he kind of had a new respect for women's athletics, or at least women's basketball, and what we were trying to do, and that we were really trying to accomplish the same kinds of things that he was. And Judd became our biggest supporter. I mean, he was, you know, not only would he bring in these big cakes when we won a big game or something, but when we lost, he would be the first one in my office the next day, close the door and sit down and have a heart-to-heart chat. You know, so it was really a great relationship. And in fact, I got a phone call from him about 3 days ago, wondering how my new job was going and, you know, what was happening. But yeah, it really developed over the course of the time that we were here together, and he became a huge advocate for women's basketball, and knew a lot of, you know, Pat Head Summit from University of Tennessee, a lot of the really successful women's coaches, primarily because of his involvement with the Pan Am Games. So he was a great mentor. I loved watching him coach, but I really loved being in press conferences with him on Monday and listening to him describe, you know, the games that had just happened and what he expected. I learned so much from him, you know, and of course, nobody has a sense of humor like Judd Heathcote.
How about his successor? How has the relationship with the program since Tom took over?
Well, I worked with Tom for 12 years when Tom was Judd's assistant, and probably worked even more closely with Tom than I did with Judd, because Judd a lot of times was kind of preoccupied with, you know, bigger things, and so Tom and I would deal with kind of the, you know, facility scheduling and, you know, some issues that concerned both of us. And then, interestingly enough, when Tom got the head job, then all of a sudden I hardly ever worked with Tom anymore. But that's, you know, that was pretty typical. But Tom has always been very supportive of me and my program as well. He had a good teacher.
Yes, he did. You mentioned one of the big changes, of course, was when the women's programs went from the organization they were in to becoming members of the NCAA. Mm-hmm. How did that affect you, and how did it affect the game?
It happened in 1982, and two things really happened simultaneously. One, the NCAA took over the AIW, and also at that time, women's basketball became an official part of the Big Ten Conference. Being part of the Big Ten Conference probably was a bigger change and improvement for us than becoming part of the NCAA, because now suddenly the media and the fans and the community and athletes and recruits all could relate to the Big Ten because of the men. I mean, they knew what the Big Ten Conference was, they knew how prestigious it was, and, you know, especially in comparison to other conferences in the country. And so all of a sudden, it just made more sense. It didn't make sense for people prior to that had any basketball knowledge, why we were so up for playing Oakland University. You know, they just didn't make sense to them. But now all of a sudden, if we're going to play Purdue, that has some meaning. And so suddenly we were getting, our crowds got bigger, the attendance, we had better media coverage. People just simply understood, you know, what a double round robin in the Big Ten meant and what it meant to finish first in the conference.
And, of course, the other big change was Title IX. Mm-hmm. How did that, what effect did that have on the program?
My second year here, we had a lawsuit that my athletes initiated. And at the time, they tried to get all the athletes from all the women's sports to be part of that that lawsuit. There was a feeling amongst the women athletes that Michigan State was definitely treating its women athletes much differently than their male counterparts. Over a period of time, I think our women's basketball players were much more persistent, and it became a men's or a women's basketball lawsuit as opposed to women's athletics here at Michigan State. And it's fairly easy to compare men's and women's basketball because we have the same number of coaches, the same number of athletes, the same season, same number of games. It's just very, very easy to compare. Well, then all of a sudden when everything's the same, but the budget is very different, or the number of scholarships are very different, or how athletes are treated, you know, when we go on road trips, I remember that was one of the big things. We were traveling to our games in station wagons and sleeping four to a room, getting one pair of shoes per year, per season. The men, by comparison, at that time were traveling by bus, sleeping two to a room, getting as many pair of shoes as they wanted. And so it became quite evident, you know, over a short period of time, that there were a lot of inequities. And so the suit was settled out of court. Actually, there was an injunction, if I remember correctly, that forced the university to give us the proper amount, the necessary amount of money to have our travel similar to the men's. And then eventually it was settled out of court, and things kind of took off from there.
That must have put you in an interesting situation between your players and the administration.
That was very interesting. And, of course, this is only my senior year of coaching, you know, at this level, so I didn't know what I was doing to begin with. But the athletes did a really nice job of keeping me out of it. I mean, whatever they did, they were doing on their own, and they were getting advice from other people, and they knew that my job would probably be in jeopardy if I was in any way connected to it. So, you know, I would hear bits and pieces every once in a while about what was going on, and obviously after a while I was doing, having to give depositions and that sort of thing, and being asked a lot of questions by the administration, but it was never a Karen Langland suit. It was a class action. It became a class action suit because, of course, the athletes that started it were getting set to graduate, so it became a class action suit, and it was, you know, the athletes against the athletic department. It was a little touch and go for a while.
Did the president's office get involved in that at all? That you remember?
I don't remember the president's office getting involved. It was more the general counsel, and I remember the, if I believe it was the provost office at that time that was sort of involved,
mm-hmm.
but not the president.
And is my memory correct that Joe Kearney was the athletic director at that time?
Yes, that's correct.
And
Nell Jackson was the women's athletic director, so they were very kind of separate positions.
One of the big changes has been recruiting. How has that changed from when you first came here? As you said, you had one scholarship.
Mm-hmm. I had one scholarship, and that scholarship had been given out by the previous coach. That's probably been the biggest change in 24 years. Is just as soon as scholarships came into the picture, then of course you needed to recruit for scholarships. And it started out being quite enjoyable and a nice process where you're just finding kids to give money to that are good enough to, you know, you think help you win a Big Ten championship, and progress to the point where it's just it's a very difficult thing because there's a lot of parents that get involved, a lot of high school coaches that get involved. There's a lot of distrust, some dishonesty, you know, with kids in terms of what they're telling you. And probably the biggest thing is it's so incredibly competitive with other schools. There's only a small group of very, very talented athletes that can play at this level, and of course everybody wants those same athletes, and so people are doing and saying things that are maybe they don't have a lot of integrity trying to get kids to make the decision to come to their schools.
You have an excellent record as far as the students who stayed here for the time period graduating. You want to comment on that?
Actually, that's something that I'm very proud of. One of the things that we looked for when we, meaning my staff and I, looked for when we were recruiting high school athletes were people that were really serious about getting an education. And I think that paid off. We did everything we could to help them be successful here at Michigan State academically. And I think they fell in love with the place, and I think they really enjoyed the academic programs, and I think their academics were given priority. Many times if they had a class that conflicted with practice, then they needed to go to the class. It was something that was a priority for them to get a degree, and so because of that, everyone that finished their 4 years at Michigan State graduated. There were a couple of kids that maybe stayed for a year and transferred. We probably had half a dozen over a period of 24 years that, you know, just weren't cut out for it, or they, a lot of times they quit because they decided they weren't going to get enough playing time and that sort of thing. We were pretty successful academically.
You mentioned when you were playing over at, I believe you said IM West, that you ran into a problem with the floors and mm-hmm. the stress fractures. How have you seen a lot of injuries over the years? Has there been any change in with the game becoming more athletic and more physical with injuries?
I don't think it's become, we've had more injuries, because I think we've also at the same time become more sophisticated in our training, and were both more sophisticated and spending more time in the off season, getting in condition. But the one injury that I've seen since the day I got here is anterior cruciate ligaments that are torn by women athletes. That probably is the most frustrating injury because it's a season-ending. In a couple cases, it's been career-ending injuries. It requires surgery, a long rehab process, and it's just something that not enough research has been done up to this point to try and alleviate the problem. And so I don't know that the injury thing has gotten worse because I think we've gotten better at training as well.
Do you have any players in particular that stand out in your mind over the 24 years you coached?
That's a lot of players. Oh. Yes. Probably one in particular that pops into my head is a woman by the name of Kathy DeBoer, who is currently the Senior Associate Athletic Director at the University of Kentucky. Kathy was here my first 2 years, helped us go to the national championship, helped us win a couple state championships. She was a very interesting person to coach, very intelligent, great athlete, had a mind of her own. But just, you know, a challenge because she wanted to know why things needed to be done the way I was asking them to do it. But someone who graduated from Michigan State and has just been so successful in my mind, you know, since graduation, has been back at Michigan State, has received a number of graduate awards here at Michigan State, and has been back many times since to speak at our academic gala that we have in the spring. She's coming back to do a leadership conference for the Michigan High School Athletic Association in a couple weeks. And after she had graduated for a period of time, she became a very good friend of mine. So she probably is one of those people that stands out. I could probably just, you know, I have a number of athletes who were criminal justice majors because of our program here at Michigan State who are doing really well. A couple of them in particular are with the LAPD, Brenda Jazowski, Mary Kay Ittenier, who are both very successful there. I mean, there's a number of my former athletes that are coaching today at very successful schools. Gail Valley is an assistant coach at Duke University. They're number 3 in the country right now. And there's a number of other ones. I think you have a tendency to remember the most recent ones.
Sure.
Maxanne Reese, Kristen Rasmussen, you know, both great athletes. Kristen playing professional basketball with the Miami Soul right now. Maxanne playing overseas in Israel. Both great athletes. There's so many.
Is there anyone that maybe that came in as a freshman that by the time they were a senior just, you know, increase your expectation or just most improved type of thing?
Yeah.
I know it's hard because of the numbers.
Yeah, I think it's there's two things there. One, you've got maybe most improved in terms of ability, you know, that maybe I didn't realize when they came how much potential they actually had. And the other thing is that as people, when they came in as freshmen at a certain maturity level and where they were when they left, it was like night and day. So I can probably put most of those athletes in one of those two categories. I think maybe Keisha Kelly would probably be one who came from a real small high school in the Detroit area and, you know, didn't play AAU basketball like most of the kids did. She didn't play against real good competition, and she became, you know, one of our all-time leading scorers and just an incredible athlete. And she's probably one of those that also fits in the other category where it matured tremendously. You know, as an athlete, I remember after her first semester, her freshman year, she was homesick. She's from Detroit, homesick, and wanted to go back home. We talked her into staying at least one semester and, you know, sticking it out, and she ended up, you know, staying for 4 years and really being a huge part of our success.
You've also had considerable success with some of your assistant coaches going on to jobs. One that comes to my mind most recently is your assistant who went over to Michigan and is now over there. You want to comment on that at all?
Sue Guevara was an assistant coach of mine for 10 years and left here one day to become the head coach of Michigan. That was about 4 years ago, and took over a program that was in shambles and had been for a long period of time. And she has really done an outstanding job of reviving that program. And of course, the problem with that is she is now our biggest competition. I told her she was the one that drove me out of coaching, because the games with Michigan the last 3 years were very, very difficult, both emotionally and